2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Dave and DeGenevieve, a new conversation.
All right, here we go.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
And we begin this morning with a scary thought, Dave. My question is this: is Salt Lake City the new New York City in the pandemic? Besides an uptick in cases, I have noticed an uptick in focus by the national media on Utah's, I'll call it a tsunami of cases, and also our militant attitude toward safety mandates.
And Debbie, when I see this tsunami, it seems like it's just washing across the entire country. It's just hitting us in different months. This month, it's us. Hey, we've got a huge show for you. Let's dive right into it. So much to talk about. It's 9:07. It's time for the launch.
Sequence engaged.
And here are the three things that Debbie wants you to know.
Countdown. Three.
Well, our other big story, from COVID apathy to voter apathy. Even if we smash a voter turnout record, which was set in 1908, 65% Americans turned out to vote, it still means millions of Americans won't vote. Now, we are 1 week out until Election Day. In Utah, at last check, 462,000 ballots, Dave. 462,000 ballots have already been received. But then when we started to research how many eligible voters didn't vote in 2016, in the last presidential election, I got to know what is going on. I really think it's this. I think too many people don't feel their vote really makes a difference.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. 50% of all eligible voters cast a ballot in 2016. I mean, that is 43% of people that don't even show up. 43% is huge. That puts us at the bottom of the nation for voting.
Countdown to...
Our other big focus today, tracking your ballot. I mailed my ballot a week and 2 days ago. That's why they call me teacher's pet. I tracked it online this morning, Dave. I'm going to let you know in about 45 minutes what I found out about my ballot. Also, the last day to postmark your ballot, if you're going to put it in the mail like I always do, is November 2nd. You got to know that. That's the day before Election Day. I have been mailing my ballot for years and years and years. I've got my kids. They're all in on mailing their ballots. But Dave doesn't do that. Dave does things differently, and I don't quite understand why.
Because I'm a terrible procrastinator. I have to drop mine off because I've always missed the postmark date. But yeah, I usually wait till Election Day. I drop it off. I haven't voted yet. I mean, I know how I'm going to vote, but what? I just haven't gotten around to it.
What?
I haven't gotten around to it. I'm curious about this. How quickly will we get the first big wave of election results next Tuesday? Because is this going to take days and days and days?
Launch countdown one.
All right, let's get back to the big story of the day. Utah's 7-day average for positive COVID cases hit another record. It's now at 17%. That's our rolling average over the last 7 days. 6,500 plus new cases in just the last 4 days. And now, Dave, the national news media is flocking to Utah. Or maybe they're zooming to Utah to figure out what has gone wrong? Okay, on September 8th, I went back and checked. We had 372 new cases. 372! That was like a month and a half ago. Yesterday, more than 1,200. Dave, I'm worried what this week will bring for hospitals and nurses. Nurses like Katrina Emery.
This isn't sustainable and we're exhausted. But all I ask is that you do what you can to protect yourself, protect me, and protect our communities.
She's exhausted. So what are you going to do to help? What are you going to do to make a difference? Dave, I'm getting scared that too many Utahns just don't care.
That's a ton of people that have contracted coronavirus. Part of this is a problem with just the way we report this. Debbie, you're a big transparency person, right? We see these numbers, but we have no idea how severe they are. The only numbers we have are hospitalizations. That's it. We don't know. Is it severe? Is it mild? Is it nothing? We need to dive into how sick these people are.
Dave and Genovic.
The launch.
Commence.
Dave, it is scary when I look at the fact that the trajectory is going in the wrong direction. We are going up and up and up in cases. In a matter of 2 weeks, we could be rationing care here in the state of Utah. That means the young get preference over the old. And here's my other concern. As I look around and I see too many people with militant attitudes towards safety guidelines in a pandemic, I'm worried we just don't love our neighbor enough.
Whoa. Hold on the love your neighbor thing. I mean, if we loved our neighbor, we wouldn't breathe. We wouldn't drive on the roads. We wouldn't heat our houses. I don't think it's a love your neighbor. I think it genuinely comes from probably a pretty pure place. People just don't buy into the intensity of it, the danger of it. Now, that's a different conversation to have than we just don't love our neighbor. Jeez, Deb. Going for the knockout punch 3 minutes into the show.
Okay, let's give you some examples here. Let's go over several examples that I've kind of tracked over the last couple of weeks as the trajectory goes. It's a tsunami now, quite frankly. I can't count how many news conferences I've heard Governor Gary Herbert beg for compliance with masks and social distancing. Right, Governor?
Some folks, maybe they're not as informed, maybe they don't see it from their perspective, but they're not taking it as seriously as they could. They're not doing all that they can do to, in fact, protect themselves and those around them.
Dave, allow me to go in depth on Utah's growing reputation to be militant about COVID-19 mandates, shall I?
Yes. Proceed.
National media, CNN, ABC, PBS NewsHour. I mean, when PBS NewsHour turns its sights on Utah, you know we're making national news with this, using Utah as a prime example of the COVID problem, citing our 30% spike in 2 weeks. 30% spike in 2 weeks. And giving the rest of the country, Dave, insight into non-mask wearing and the non-social distancing that's happening?
Well, first of all, we're not the only state spiking. 22 states are spiking right now. They're in the red high category. And as far as mask wearing, most of us are wearing masks. I just saw the state's goal. The state's goal is 80% mask compliance. I looked at the numbers. They've got us at 69%. Now, that's not perfect, but it's pretty close to their goal. 69%, that means a lot of people are wearing masks.
So can I give you some examples we've recently reported on where there is questionable compliance? We talked about yesterday at Lagoon where KSL Television's Chopper 5 caught images of people not necessarily social distancing. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, no question. Of course they're not social distancing. This is Lagoon. I don't want to sound like an apologist here, but Lagoon is busy. It's always busy. It has a capacity of 40,000 people. Did people think that Laguna was going to be wide open? I mean, even though they've scaled it back to 6,000 people, they're not staffing it like it's got 40,000. You're going to have lines. So if you're not comfortable with busy, then stay away from Lagoon.
All right, we're running out of time. So let me give you some more examples. Farmers Market in Lehigh. Vendor says he was kicked out for giving away masks. Now, the organizer says, nah, it was a customer service issue over how he was treating customers. I still think this wouldn't have never risen to the level of an article in the Salt Lake Tribune had we not been in COVID-19. That's another example. I've seen countless pictures on social media of shoulder-to-shoulder crowds, no mask wearing going on. I'm not sure they're all family members when there's several hundred of them packed into a room, Dave.
Yeah. I mean, there's no question. You're going to see the worst on social media. I sit 6 to 10 feet apart from everyone in the newsroom. I don't post that on social media.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dave and Janovic.
Worn out with COVID, talking about it, dealing with it, planning our lives around it. So let's just talk about it some more right now. You can hear the exasperation in Dr. Angela Dunn's voice.
And, you know, I don't know what to do anymore.
And people aren't changing behaviors, even though the numbers are soaring. The question we have is why? And Debbie, I have a theory. Why you have two teams when it comes to the pandemic. Team worry and team odds all overblown.
I guess you're going to put me on team worry.
Yeah, you might land in there. And some people think that I'm team overblown. We probably fall a little bit more in the middle than people think. But instead of trying to convince each other who's right, team worry or team overblown, I want to take this segment and try to understand why we feel the way we do.
What category are you in, honestly? Because I know what category I'm in. I'm definitely in. I side with team worry.
Yeah.
I would say I side with taking more precautions, as many precautions as I possibly can. And then pontificating to my family members about why they need to take all the precautions they can so they can be on team worry with me.
But then you still show up to the gym. You know, I mean, some people... It's just...
Is this a gotcha?
No, I think we all want to put ourselves neatly in one category or the other, but largely we all kind of, we bleed over a little bit. You know, some of us wear masks, but we still go to ball games, right? We'll go to a softball game like I do. In the media, you and I are in a little bit of a different situation where we report on it. We talk about it every single day, but I think it's probably fair to say that you and I probably... on some level represent team worry and team overblown.
Okay, I agree with you. But you feel as though you're not a worry wart?
Right.
Or you are a worry wart?
I don't feel the panic. When I hear Dr. Dunn and she's speaking and she's so emotional, let me play this soundbite again. Listen to her voice.
And, you know, I don't know what to do anymore.
When you heard that, a light bulb went off in your head, Dave, and you were telling me about something that you recently read that's helping you understand why we think the way we do about COVID-19.
Yeah.
Please explain.
Well, I was reading Malcolm Gladwell's book, David and Goliath. A lot of people have read this. And anyway, he tells a story about in World War II, the Germans were bombing London day and night, okay. 8 months, 40,000 killed, 40,000 injured. But every day, Londoners would wake up, they would show up to work, they would live their life. And in fact, that's kind of where they got this this saying, the British stiff upper lip. Because they were so stoic during this bombing blitz, 8 months, how were they able to do this? Well, Malcolm Gladwell brings up this this idea from a Canadian psychologist. It's called the direct hit, the near miss, and the remote miss.
Okay.
And see if you can compare it. It's not perfect, right? But compare it to our response to COVID. Okay, so he says the community. So Utah, for example, the morale of the community depends on the reaction of the survivors, right? So a direct hit would be those people that were killed by the bombs in World War II, or people that were...
And you relate it to COVID being those family members who've had family members directly impacted, perhaps killed because of COVID, contracting COVID?
Yeah, the direct hit would be those people that died directly from COVID, right? So they're not the survivors. They're not the ones that impact the morale of the community. A near miss is what you were saying. The people that felt the blast, they see the destruction, but they survive. But they're deeply impressed. It's a shock. And then they're preoccupied with the horrors that they witnessed.
So with COVID, this would be the doctors and nurses and as you said, the close family members and friends who are deeply impacted. And we've heard that in the voices of the nurses who are treating patients with COVID.
This isn't sustainable and we're exhausted. But all I ask is that you do what you can to protect yourself, protect me, and protect our communities.
Anybody that has had a family member, or if you've talked to a doctor or a nurse who've treated these patients that are dying, they would be considered that near miss. They are directly affected. But the majority of Utahns fall under the remote miss, meaning they heard the sirens, the bombs explode, they watched the aircraft overhead.
They know the news stories.
They know the news stories, exactly. But they haven't directly been affected. Oh, I heard that someone died, like four people died today, but they don't know that person. And because they are aware of it, but haven't been affected, they have this sense of invulnerability. Like, this would never, oh, this isn't going to hit my family. We wear masks, right? And it gives a little bit of...
Or we don't wear masks.
Right.
Because we're not worried about it hitting our family.
Because it hasn't directly hit us, Debbie. And that's where I look at it and I think, oh, that makes so much more sense because so many people in Utah have not directly been touched by COVID. So it does feel like it's overblown. But for people that have been in those hospital rooms, that have lost family members, you can see the panic and the confusion why everyone else is not panicking.
Utah's coronavirus spike. In-depth coverage on KSL News Radio.
Dave, your explanation about how we react emotionally to crises such as this pandemic really helped me understand why I'm on team worry when it comes to mandates, and I try to observe all the mandates, and quite frankly, you're on team overblown.
And you know what? I think so often we want to attach evil to wherever you land, right? We want to attach some nefarious or terrible reaction. If you think that this is overblown a little bit, or if you're just worrying about every single thing, I think part of it is just understanding and listening, because I don't think we're as crazy far apart as sometimes we think. We think everybody's the crazy social media person that's melting down for not wearing a mask.
So just to you know, revisit it for a second for those who are just jumping in the car and friends of the show who missed your explanation. You've got the theory of direct hits, near misses, and remote misses.
Yes.
Related to COVID-19. So a direct hit would be somebody who...
Died from COVID.
A near miss would be...
someone that lost a close family member, a doctor or a nurse, someone that's been very close.
Tend to really, really be involved in this and probably have a lot of strong emotions about it.
And normally they fall in team worry. Understandably so.
They're with Deb.
Remote misses are the people that have not been directly touched by COVID. So they don't think it's as big a deal. They are team overblown.
So we're wondering where our listeners fall on this, team worry or team overblown. I feel as though I've been staunchly attached to team worry from the beginning, but you often point out you go to the gym. So would that push me more in the middle, more toward maybe I'm okay with certain aspects of going about certain aspects of my life? Because I tell you what, I would put my restaurant visits lately in the sort of the red alert category, where it makes me nervous when people walk up to me who are patrons of the restaurant, their customers, they don't have their masks on, they want to talk to me right over my food. It's closed, enclosed, they're close because it's loud, so they want to talk in my nose, you know. And then the gym, you point out, well, there's potentially some issues there too, but I'm okay with the gym. I would put the gym in the sort of the yellow to green category for me.
Right.
I'm okay with it.
Right. And I think so many of us kind of are fluid. We feel okay about some things and not about others. We have your phone calls. Listen, we got Jake, we got Tammy, we got Karen. We're going to get to your phone calls. Let's start off with Jake. Jake, where do you land? Are you team worry or team overblown?
Well, I think I definitely fall within team overblown, but you know, I do cross over, I think, just like you guys have, you know, have been pointing out. But, you know, I think there's a fourth category that in your example.
Okay.
And that's the near misses, but it's the near misses with a dud missile. So in other words, most people at this point, I feel like, have either experienced COVID themselves or know somebody close to them that has gotten COVID, but it's not a big deal. I recovered. I didn't even feel symptoms. And listen, every day we are, if just being part of humanity, we've lived with risks, and we have to weigh risks and rewards. Am I going to get in the car? Is the reward worth getting from point A to point B? There's always been contagions. Do I participate in society knowing I can get sick? There's always been that. And I think for most people that I talk to that are in team overblown, feel like the reward of participating in society and trying to normalize society is worth the risk of contracting COVID.
That's a great point. And I think your description is very good. The miss with a dud. When it comes to doctors and nurses, they don't see those cases. They see the worst of the worst, which would explain why they're so nervous and so panicky, because they are seeing it firsthand. Let's jump out to another caller, Tammy from Draper. Tammy, where do you land?
Hi. Well, my entire family of five people in our home had COVID in September. It was awful. None of us were hospitalized, but it wiped out a month of our life as it kind of transmitted. And my husband's actually a physician. He didn't get it at work. He probably got it from our teenage son, but it ruined his high school mountain biking season. It put our kids, all of them, behind in school. But there is hope. Right before the first person got sick, with a big power outage in Salt Lake, we had an aunt and uncle that were elderly come and stay with us, and we wore masks inside the entire time, and they ate at a different table, and that protected them. They didn't get COVID.
Wow.
So I have faith in masks, but I'm also worried about mental health. You know, now that two of our three kids were online, mostly online, and now they're all back in school since we've had COVID, but
Tammy, is there
I think we
thing,
need to address the...
Tammy,
go ahead.
Is there one thing that you can recommend as we're, you know, sort of sitting at this kitchen table right now with all of our listeners talking about, you know, team overblown or team worry on, you know, COVID mandates? Is there one thing that you as a family would have done differently? Just give me one thing you would have done differently.
I would have been more strict with our teenager. And you know what? Parents of teenagers make a difference. When my kids go to kids' houses, it's a little bit less risky because we've already had COVID, but I'm like, did they ask people to wear a mask? No. It's like when people come in my car, I ask them to wear a mask, you know, if I'm taking kids right. somewhere. Or parents can make a difference of guiding their teenagers. It's like if you want your kids to have a senior year, which I have a senior in high school, encourage them to be careful so we can move on. I mean, I remember our 13-year-old daughter was the last one to get sick, and she was crying. She said, everyone's sleeping all the time. I can't hug anyone.
Oh, Tammy, thank you so much. I love that piece of advice, Dave.
Yeah. Final caller. Let's jump out. Karen, sorry, we're running out of time, but you got a minute. We want to hear from you.
Hey, so I guess I'm on Team Proactive, actually. I don't like to live my life in fear, but I also acknowledge that COVID is a real thing. I've not been affected by it directly. But I just kind of figure that, you know, acknowledging it, that it's a real thing, why wouldn't I take the necessary precautions to prevent the spread? Like, why wouldn't I be a good neighbor to my community? Why wouldn't I do the things that they're asking me to do to help our community at large? Like, why wouldn't I be a good American in doing that?
So,
and putting my own biases aside.
Love that.
Yeah, like why wouldn't I make an effort to do that? Even though I've not been directly affected by it, why wouldn't I make an effort to be a good neighbor? Like, why wouldn't I do that? So,
Karen, thank you for your phone call. We appreciate you calling in. Jake, Tammy, Karen, great phone calls. We appreciate that.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.